Rachel called me Tuesday night to tell me that Ron was in the hospital. I remembered my conversation with John Jones, who filled in for Ron last time and said, "Next time it's your turn." And when I hung up the phone, I thought, "Oh my goodness, it's next time." So anyway, I don't mind standing up in front of you. It was the week before, well, Tuesday night, trying to get my thoughts organized and then my notes organized, and then, you know, here we are. And it's good to be in front of you, people who want to hear the truth. I also want to wish my sister a happy birthday today. And she's not here, but she listens to these lessons on her drive to work during the week. And so she's going to go, "Ah, what did you say that for?" But I love you, Deanna, and happy birthday. Courage. What do you think of when I say courage? You think of the red badge of courage? Or an old movie, Captain Courageous? Maybe you're thinking about Ron's lessons on courageous parenting. Perhaps a poem. Half a league, half a league, half a league onward. All in the valley of death rode the 600, forward the light brigade, charge for the guns, he said, into the valley of death rode the 600. Charge of the light brigade by Tennyson. Or maybe my favorite, "Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. 'Twas the 18th in April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive that remembers that famous day and year." Longfellow, Paul Revere's ride. Courage. What makes a king out of a slave? Courage. What makes the flag on the mast wave? Courage. What makes the elephant charge his tusk in the misty mist of the dusky dust? What makes the muskrat guard his musk? Courage. What makes the Sphinx the seventh wonder? Courage. What makes the dawn come up like thunder? Courage. What makes the Hottentot so hot? What puts the ape in the apricot? What have they got that I ain't got? You can say that again. The Cowardly Lion from Wizard of Oz. You might think of war heroes like Audie Murphy, who stood 5'5" and 110 pounds and 17 years of age. They rejected him because of his age. And then he got some help from his sister in doctoring his birth certificate. He enlisted, passed out the first day of boot camp. His commanding officer thought it'd be best to transfer him to the bakery and cook unit or division, and he just pleaded with them, "Nothing for me but the infantry, please," and so they kept him. Shipped him off to North Africa. They saw no action there, but he continued his training. He was very likable by not only his fellow enlisted men, but the officers too, and he was a hard worker. But he had courage, because in the next 27 months, starting with the landing at Sicily, he would go on to earn 33 U.S. medals and decorations, 2 medals from France, and 1 from Belgium. He received every decoration for valor that was available to an Army ground personnel at the time. He won the Silver Star twice in 3 days, 2 Bronze Stars, 3 Purple Hearts, the Distinguished Service Cross, and the Medal of Honor. He went in as a private and came out 27 months later as a first lieutenant. Then in 10 years in the Texas National Guard, he rose to the rank of major. Audie Murphy had courage. David, the shepherd boy, had courage. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, we find out about this boy. He's tending sheep for his father. A terrible job, by the way, kids. That was the worst job you could have. Looking at this group of young people now, you are the shepherds of a stinky flock of sheep, and it is not the fun job to have. He's going from his father's sheep to the battle to take supplies to his 3 oldest brothers who are fighting, and then to bring word, gossip, news back to his father. No email. So he shows up one day, and he's asking questions, what's going on? And then he hears the challenge by the giant Goliath. And he says, who is this guy that defies the armies of the living God? And as he's asking questions, the oldest brother, Eliab, gets angry with him. And speaking from experience, as the oldest of five kids, I had three younger brothers. I got along well with Tim, got along great with David. He was very passive, but John was a pest. And Ron, I did not stick him in a donation box only because the opportunity did not provide itself. And David says, I'll fight this giant. I'll take him on. And so when King Saul hears about this, he's brought into his presence. And David says, I fought a lion, I fought a bear, I protected my father's sheep, and I killed them. And I killed them. And there's a reading in the text that David says, I said, the Lord delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, and he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. That word hand is mistranslated, because David uses the same vernacular talking about Goliath that he talks about the lion and the bear. And by the way, the lions over there were smaller than the lions of Africa. But how many of you want to wrestle with a Pacific Northwest cougar? Yeah, that's what I thought. We're talking about a powerful cat and a hungry bear. And a comparison between, as David calls him, an uncircumcised heathen. David draws that comparison. He is well practiced with the sling. It says later that Saul tries to put all of his clothing on him, his battle things, and David says, let me test these. Let me try them out. He tries walking. He can't even walk in them. And he says, I cannot use these because I've not tested them. I do not know how they work. I am not familiar with them. Then he grabs his stick, his staff, and his sling, and he gets the five smooth stones. I saw a video several years ago of what was supposed to be where the Noah's Ark was at, and it was quite disappointing, the video, really. To me, the most entertaining part was about a minute of film that was shot of little shepherd boys in Turkey, Turkish shepherd boys who were about 10, 11, 12, and they were playing with slings. And you know how kids are. They're showing off and hot-dogging for this guy and his camera. And I learned that they put the sling down here, and they slung it like a fast-pitch softball pitcher. And so they were whipping and just like that, letting that thing fly. And you put a rock in there the size of a golf ball, and then you fling that thing at your enemy. And when it leaves the pouch, it's traveling at the same velocity as a .45 caliber pistol. Very similar to what Audie Murphy used during World War II. It is a weapon intended to crush bones, break bones, and possibly kill. And David's practiced with this. You know, Ron, I'm going to borrow from you again. I think tending sheep is a lot like landing those, you know, and flying big commercial airlines. It's like 5 or 6 hours of boredom with about 2 minutes of excitement. And that's probably what sheep is. You know, guarding, watching sheep. It's a lot of boredom. And so what would a kid do? He'd have to practice with that sling, if nothing else, just to keep his mind off of the boredom. And David, by the time he is 12 years old here, he's got three brothers that are at least 20 years of age that are in. He's got four more brothers at home because there's eight boys all together. Playing with that sling. Practicing with that sling. And he says, I can take this guy. And he does. He kills him. He has courage. His courage comes because he's practiced his sling. And his courage comes from the faith that he knows that God is with him. He says to Goliath, I'm going to kill you today. God is going to bring you down. What does he say exactly? He says, "You come to me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you, and I will give your dead bodies of the armies of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, and all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into my hands." We need that confidence and that courage to face our enemies. What is your enemy? Do you have addiction? Is that your enemy? How about your health? Can you face that, or your age? Some of you are too young. You're not taken seriously. Some are too old, and you feel like you just can't go on anymore. Sister Faye Layton, I love you. There's two things I know about you for sure. One is that you read your Bible every day. And the second is you'll be here at service on Sunday mornings. God bless you. Courage. Thank you, sister. David knows God is with him. As Christians, we never face the enemy alone. We need courage to resist sin. Joseph is sold into bondage. His brothers are jealous of him. He's a dreamer. He's his father's favorite. He has a coat of many colors. And in chapter 37, he's sold into bondage. Chapter 39, he's purchased by a man named Potiphar, captain of Pharaoh's armies. Potiphar's wife lusts for Joseph. He's described as, he's 17 years old, that we know. And he's described as a handsome young man and in form. He's a good looking dude. Brad Pitt is stocking the shelves of your pantry. And he's in charge of everything. In fact, Potiphar trusts him so much, it literally says the only thing he worries about is the food that he puts in his mouth. Because everything Joseph touches is successful. His house is run orderly. His fields are producing crops. His servants, they've got to be happy because he's their boss. And yet this woman pursues him saying, "Come lie with me. Come lie with me. Sleep with me." This sounds like a page right out of the news. You know, just less than a month ago or so, he hit the airwaves with a story about a teacher, counselor at a Christian school in Vancouver who was arrested for sleeping with one of the young men there. Isn't it sad that this has been going on for thousands of years? I mean, we talk about men, and I'm disappointed in a lot of men who do not show good leadership, but the women also, it seems, in this world, and I can't say just today's world, this has happened in 2000 BC, that there are women who will take advantage of young men. And Joseph stands up to her. He knows that this is a sin. He says, "How can I commit this sin against my God and my master? Against the God I serve, and against my boss. I can't do this." And he gets caught in a situation where he's alone in the house, and she grabs him, and he pulls out of his cloak, and he runs. And then she turns the table and yells and screams for the servants to come. And when her master, Potiphar, comes home, says, "Look what this guy did. He made sport of me. He wanted me to sleep with him." And he's thrown in jail. Here's a question for you, though. How did Joseph know that this was a sin? There's no Ten Commandments. There's no "thou shalt not commit adultery." There's no law of Moses yet. Won't be for several hundred years. Well, I'll tell you why. Because for all of Jacob's fault, he was a godly man who tried to teach his boys what was right and what was wrong. You see, as I said, in chapter 37, Joseph is sold. Chapter 39, we pick up the story of him in Egypt. But in chapter 38, we have the story of Judah and Tamar. And Judah goes to purchase the services of a prostitute who turns out to be his daughter-in-law in disguise. You'll have to read chapter 38 to find out what's going on. But Judah has no problem with the services of a prostitute, whereas Joseph knows it is a sin to sleep with a woman that is not his wife. Christians today kind of wink an eye at adultery. I have had to talk to and confront with people over the years who were adulterers. And the answer I generally get is not one of sorrow, but usually kind of a, it just kind of happened. There's no remorse. There's no repentance. It's really a cavalier attitude. And with adultery comes the number one method of birth control in this country, and that is abortion. Abortion. Nationwide, since Roe versus Wade in 1973, and I looked this up on the internet last night, and of course the internet's always right, 50 million babies have been murdered since 1973. 50 million. We, as a country, just the United States, murder 1.5 million babies a year through abortion. I hit another website because I'd heard of this statistic and I wanted to check it out. And I typed in number of lives lost in military service or something to that. And this page came up and it detailed how many people have died in every war since the Revolutionary War, 1775, through 6 years ago is how far it was updated, 6 years ago. In every war we fought in, add up all the total casualties of armed servicemen and women who have died, that number comes to 1,346,000 plus. In other words, we murder more babies every year than soldiers who have lost their lives in 221 years. State of Oregon, 2006, the average abortion rate was 235 per week. 33 babies are murdered every day in the state of Oregon. As a slave, Joseph had no rights, but he went to prison because he was a moral person who did not want to sin against God. We need that kind of courage. God bless you for those who have stood in line holding signs that say, abortion kills babies.